The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, the program that compresses more content into 55 minutes than most shows of 2 or 3 hours can put into their programming. It's getting harder and harder to listen to some of my favorite podcasts with the commercials, it seems, almost every 6-7 minutes. You just get on the rower or you just get into the shower and then you've got the next commercial, a lot of them now read by the host, the commentator, in any event. This is one continuous, well, we do have one promo generally right in the middle, promoting one of our pieces of literature, one of our booklets. But outside of that, you have a lot that's compressed into this hour, thanks to Richard Palmer for filling in on yesterday's program, giving you his unique perspective on the news. On today's show, we're going to be talking about quite a bit about free speech. We have been collecting quite a bit of articles on Facebook banning such and such groups. We'll look into that. We've also had the girls at work on some research to fill it out a little bit. So we'll come to that a little bit later on in the show. But first, just a few comments on the president's tax returns. His, I guess, the big reveal from the New York Times, surprise, surprise. That was, what, Tuesday night? And then it was all over the news yesterday. The fact that he, or the New York Times, came upon his tax returns from 1985 to 1994. So this is going back, what would that be? This is going back more than 30 years, and we're finding out, finally, we're finding out about President Trump's, Donald Trump's, this real estate mogul. We're finding out that he actually, well, it depends on what report you listened to yesterday, whether or not he was a loser or incompetent or a tax cheat. Whatever it was, he certainly wasn't successful. He was a terrible businessman, we now know, because of this New York Times report. Supposedly he lost money, or at least he declared losses on his tax return, something that's not that unusual. But that's just the beginning. It's just the beginning, and hopefully we can find out a whole lot more information. Do we have... Samuel, turn your mic on. Do we have Donald Trump's 1996 tax returns?
I thought this was going to be a softball question. I think we do. Yes.
Where do we have 1998?
I think so.
Well, if we have all of this information, we need to analyze this. We need to get the girls on this in a hurry and make sure that we know everything that he's been doing. We need to dig into his divorce court proceedings, everything. We have got to know. The New York Times made the big point that the American people are demanding this. They want to know this. They're upset because he said that he would turn them over, and he didn't do it. This is from the big some of the detail, some of the energy that they're putting into this investigation, and this is just one of many, as Victor Davis Hanson said yesterday on one of the talk shows. It says, overall, Trump lost so much money that he was able to avoid paying income taxes for 8 of the 10 years. It says, since the 2016 presidential campaign, listen to this, journalists at the Times and elsewhere have been trying to piece together Trump's complex and concealed finances. While the Times did not obtain the president's actual tax returns, it received the information contained in the returns from someone who had legal access to it. That's not a story. The fact that the Times is distributing for all the world to see the tax information on Donald Trump's tax returns coming from some confidential source, another leak, It says the Times was then able to find matching results in the IRS information on top earners, a publicly available database that each year comprises a one-third sampling of those taxpayers with identifying details removed. It says it also confirms significant findings using other public documents, along with confidential Trump family tax and financial records from the newspaper's 2018 investigation into the origin of the president's wealth. This delving into the background of this man that they used to love just a few years ago. They celebrated his celebrity, his wealth. He had earned it, but not anymore. Listen to David Brooks. This is him on. This is one of the leading columnists. I think he's supposed to be a Republican, probably one in name only, but he writes a column regularly for the New York Times. And here's what he had to say yesterday. Clip one.
He is the greatest con man in American history. And this, before he became president, he conned us all into thinking he was a successful businessman. And then later, when people realized he was not a successful businessman, he conned people into electing him president. And he did it through a lot of nefarious ways.
He conned his way into the presidency, and he did it through a lot of nefarious ways. And so the New York Times, following up the big reveal from the other night, its editorial board today has decided that this is clearly in the public interest. The public demands this. And you may have seen some clips of just your average Joe American out in middle America somewhere saying, and you usually have to go to Fox to find some feedback like this, but someone saying, I don't care what's in the tax returns. I voted for him. And so far as I can tell, he's doing a pretty good job with the economy. So far as I can tell, he's bringing in some new and fresh ideas, and it's helping the United States. This is a man who was elected, what was it, 63 million people, who never saw his tax returns before the election, and I guess they didn't care. I guess it wasn't that big of an issue for them. The New York Times says today, this is following the big expose, the public deserves to know. It deserves to know more about his finances. When have they demanded this of any presidential candidate? They need to know where he borrowed his money from. They need to know with whom he's done business, to whom he may be beholden. We need to know. He broke that promise, after all, that his predecessors, ever since Nixon, to reveal the taxes. And so what is he hiding? He must be hiding something. And where are all the crimes, by the way, in that big revelation? If this is 10 years of tax returns, where are the crimes? As the New York Post put it, if you're going to be upset about the tax laws in the United States and the write-offs and this complicated system that every individual or every company of worth is going to try to take advantage of, teams of accountants. If you're upset about that, well, then let's just do a straight flat tax, the New York Post says. If that does seem like it would be fair, it certainly would be simpler. If you want a flat tax of 10, 15, 20%, well, then let's go. Let's do it. Let's see how eager the Democrats would be for something that simple, for something that's not complex. The Times said this morning the returns also could help clarify whether Mr. Trump continues to cheat on his taxes. Notice that word they used there, continues. See, he's a cheat. He's lying. He's dishonest. And he does it every single year. And so we need more. We need more than from 1985 to 1994. We need all through the 90s. We need through the 2000s. We need up through, we especially need up through 2015, 16, 17, because this is when he's doing business with Russian companies. Over at The Week, it talks about the dangerous precedent. In case anyone's concerned about this, in Washington, D.C., the dangerous precedent of Congress demanding Trump's tax returns. It refers back to this case in 1957, where the former Chief Justice, Earl Warren, I won't bore you with some of the details of the case, but he came out in his ruling and said that Congress has no general authority to expose the private affairs of individuals. That's where this is headed. Well, it's already happening. And like Donald Trump has said, like William Barr has said, like my father has said, we quoted from another article just the other day that said, if they can do this to Donald Trump, what can they do to you? What were they doing to ordinary people several years ago? AP reporters, a Fox News reporter. That's what's incredible about this story is that journalists themselves were targets not that long ago. And now here they are, saying every branch, every arm, every agency of the government should be used to go after this man, to reveal everything about this man. This ruling, the Watkins case, it makes it clear, the Week says, that one party winning a majority in either chamber of Congress does not authorize fishing expeditions through the private affairs of any American, whether president or pipe fitter. You can't just go on a fishing expedition against your political opponent. And that's saying it nicely these past 2.5-3 years. It says, without an explicit and clear predicate for Congress to review Trump's tax returns, the courts may well side with Warren in this instance. Otherwise, well, it goes on to say, it's just open season. Everyone becomes a target. And that's really what this is about. It's a fishing expedition. I thought Victor Davis Hanson summed it up well on Tucker Carlson's show last night. There's a little music playing in the background. I think they must have been at a rally or something. But here's Victor Davis Hanson in response to a question or a statement from Tucker. Clip 2.
Within bounds to reveal people's tax returns?
No, it isn't. But, of course, New York Times is sanctimonious, and for a higher good, it's ethical to break the law, or at least traffic in people with people who break the law. But I don't understand the narrative, because they're basically saying that 35 years ago, when Donald Trump was in his early 40s, he either did one of two things. The guy who now gave us 3% GDP plus and record economy we haven't seen in 40 years was financially incompetent, and that matters apparently, or he didn't pay taxes on money he never made or money he lost. So it doesn't make any sense. And so I guess what the people baked into the idea that the Manhattan real estate market wasn't a nice place ever, and that people who participate in it take ups and downs. And then it's not a story, but it is a story in this sense. It's the Logan Act, the Emoluments Clause, the 25th Amendment, Mueller. It's one more narrative rather than here's Trump's record and here us on the progressive side, here's our record, so the people are going to adjudicate. And that can't happen because they don't want that question to be asked.
They don't want to get into the record. They don't want to get into, well, here's what we propose as opposed to Donald Trump. And that's why we're going to win in 2020. They're looking for another narrative. And they're really getting desperate, aren't they? Logan Act, emoluments, the 25th Amendment, Mueller. And now it's the taxes. You see how far removed we are from Russia. They haven't exactly given up on that yet, but still, it was supposed to be, remember when the Mueller report came out and they had no evidence, no collusion, and John Brennan and James Clapper were there quickly to assure us that, well, let's not veer away from how this all started. The Russians interfered, and both sides agree on that. Yes, but look at how far removed we are from that genesis, the Logan Act, the emoluments, the 25th Amendment, the Mueller investigation, all these investigations in the House and Senate. And now Donald Trump's record as a businessman, his financial dealings, who he borrowed from, who he was beholden to. It's another narrative so that they can go after Donald Trump. And they're doing it, well, now as some are even saying, just openly. Who cares about the rules? Who cares about the laws? This is a lawless president we're talking about, so we just have to take him out any way possible. The ends justify the means. Listen to this former Obama official, Jen Psaki. She's basically saying Gerald Nadler, the House majority leader, she's basically saying that he ought to abandon the rules and just go after Donald Trump. This is clip six.
I will say in this case, Nadler is, I hope he's not following the rules. Yes, the legal rules, but we need to be more rule breakers on the Democratic side and not play by the game that has always been played, because we're dealing with Donald Trump and we're dealing with an administration that is not always playing by it.
And as you might expect, no pushback from Jake Tapper or anyone else. We need more rule breakers, she said. We need people who are willing to break the rules. Because, well, he does, so we should. This is from the administration that, if you remember, as they were going out, they said, now everything in this investigation, it's going to be done by the book. That's what they said on the way out. It's like Victor Davis Hanson said there about the sanctimonious New York Times, thinking it's above the law. Illegal activity, printing someone's financials, getting it from a leaker. I mean, they're just doing it nonstop. That's never the story, though. Their lawlessness. In fact, they're calling for more of it. We need more rule breakers? That is unbelievable. That's nightly news commentary, though. That's an Obama official. She's now a news commentator. John Brennan, an Obama official, a high-ranking one. He's now a news commentator. James Clapper, an Obama official. He's now a news commentator. And you go right on down the line. Jake Tapper, who worked for a Democrat. Jim Sciutto, Obama. George Stephanopoulos, Clinton. And on it goes. And they want to pick on the few, the handful at Fox News. They're all in it together. And they want more rule breakers. They want more people who are willing to break rules. And there's quite a few, as we've seen from the Mueller investigation. There's quite a few who are willing to do that. How do you investigate, as we've said before, how do you investigate Russian interference and not even for 1 second, consider the filthy Russian dossier as possibly being itself Russian disinformation? It's not even considered. He loaded his team, Mueller did, with rule breakers. And they were blind to what was happening on their side. The lawlessness, the rule-breaking. And they went after Donald Trump with everything that they had, and they still couldn't convict him. They still couldn't spring forward with an indictment. Well, we'll tie this in a little bit later with some of the content we've put together on free speech. I just want to draw your attention to one article. This was a fairly big news development yesterday on the Iran nuke deal. And as you know, the United States is tightening the screws on Iran, reimposing sanctions, and then telling the European nations, look, if you're going to help Iran, then we may slap sanctions that would impact you, the European nations, as well. And so Iran's kind of in the middle and really trying to blackmail the European nations. And Eli Lake at Bloomberg is saying Europe shouldn't give in to this Iranian blackmail. It says in this piece, this is from Eli Lake, why hasn't Iran pulled out of that agreement given Trump's decision to reimpose the crippling sanctions that his predecessor lifted? Why haven't they pulled out yet? They keep threatening to do so. But why haven't they pulled out of the deal, the JCPOA? One reason, this is Eli Lake, one reason is that despite everything Trump has done in the last year, the agreement remains a sweet deal for Iran. What does this say about Barack Obama and the deal that he worked with the mullahs? Even with some of the sanctions reimposed, Iran doesn't want to walk away from this because it's a sweet deal for them. Still, it's still a good deal for them. It says if it complies with the deal's limits for the next 7 to 13 years, it can stockpile. Well, you know the rules. It's just wait out the clock. And then we can have all the nuclear weapons we want. So they're hanging on. And they're making threats. Look, if you don't do this the way we want it, we could walk away, and then that's dangerous for the world. In fact, like Eli Lake brings out, the reason they haven't walked away to this point is because it's such a good deal for them. The Obama administration, remember, was colluding with Iran. It says here, Trump's campaign of maximum pressure offers a way out of this flawed bargain. By waging economic war on Iran, the president is using the same tactics that pressured the regime into nuclear negotiations in the first place. Despite the PR campaign from Iran's foreign ministry, the evidence shows that threats and pressure work against the Islamic Republic. Threats and pressure. I think it was Joel Hilliker once who made the point that if this is the way they act, if this is the way they act when, you know, things are pretty difficult, when their economy's running into the ground, what are they going to do when they have access to all this money? It says, slowly and surely, the maximum pressure is building. Instead of trying to relieve it, the Europeans should use that pressure to get a better nuclear bargain with Iran. Well, in the short term, there could be some back and forth. In the long term, we know Daniel 11 and verse 40 is the prophecy to view these events through, and the fact that eventually the German-led European king of the north will come against the king of the south, radical Islam, headed up by Iran, like a whirlwind, a spectacular clash, and this will trigger world war. Worldwide war. So there's going to be quite a lot more hostility between these two. The Iranian-led radical Islamic movement and the German-led King of the North. When we come back, we'll delve into some of the stories and developments recently regarding the First Amendment and free speech in the United States. You're listening to The Trumpet Daily Radio Show, and we'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
Herbert W. Armstrong long forecast the arrival of a military superpower in Europe. In a world where European nations can't rely on the United States, one in which they fear Russia and face the constant threat of radical terror, their only hope of survival is to band together. This is what we see happening. And what we see happening was prophesied in your Bible. Request Germany and the Holy Roman Empire to learn about the history of Germany and the Holy Roman Empire and to understand where the events in Europe today are leading. 3,000 years ago, the prophet Daniel explained that at the time of the end, radical Islam would push against Europe. That time is now. We are witnessing the first manifestations of this Islamist push against Europe, and it's leading to a spectacular clash between these two prophesied kings, the King of the North and the King of the South. What does the Bible say about the identity of these two kings? What about the end time? Will everyone be affected by these events? Request our two booklets, The King of the South and Germany and the Holy Roman Empire. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
Joel Hilliker on his program yesterday, the Trumpet Hour, he asked, what's wrong with our universities? And he pulled together some of that content for his Trumpet Brief last night, an excellent article about how left-wing, how radically left-wing the university campuses in the United States are swinging. And why is this important? Because as he brings out, today's leaders, all the leaders that we see in politics, in business, in the media, all of the mainstream commentators, they were yesterday's university students. And so this is very dangerous. When you go to college, the more time you spend there, the further to the left your thinking becomes. That's what Mr. Hilliker brought out. You become more left-wing. And so if you want to see where the United States will be 5-10 years from now, well, look at the university campuses. And he just gives some, what should be some shocking examples, these diversity professionals that are on certain campuses, in some cases, dozens of them, hundreds of them, just hunting for racism and bigotry on campus. And of course, that's their job. And they're finding a lot of it, supposedly. They're finding all kinds of evidence that America is racist, that many Americans are bigoted. It says here, this is from Mr. Hilliker's piece, it says, claiming to fight for tolerance and freedom, leftism uses intimidation, bullying, and mob rule to attempt to gain power. And with that power, it uses coercion, authoritarianism, and tyranny. It claims to fight for tolerance and freedom, but it uses intimidation and bullying and mob rule to gain power. There was a story, most of you in America are probably unfamiliar with this, but there was a story here in the UK at The Spectator, a piece by Dan Murray about the Scruton tapes and how that this scandal, it's like a biopsy of our society today. The smear job aimed at Sir Roger Scruton, smeared by the media, fired by the government. And now his life's work has come into question. It's under attack. It's being assailed by the mob. It mentions in this Spectator piece what happened with Tim Hunt. We talked about that. It's hard to believe that was several years ago now. But he was taken down for a comment that he made, I think it was at a seminar internationally, and someone tweeted out a statement taken out of context, and next thing you know, he's out of a job. He's out of a job. It mentions the Covington scandal, the Catholic schoolboys from just a few months ago, and how that the media, just because of one smirk, the way that they saw it, That told the whole story. We know what happened. We don't need to watch 2 hours of tape. We can look at that boy's smirk and know that he's the one who's guilty. He's the one who's evil. It says the hit job on Sir Roger Scruton can be seen as a classic of the genre. He was sacked within 5 hours of the Twitter storm breaking. His fate offers a perfect case study in the art of modern character assassination, except that in this instance, it unraveled and the whole nature of the trick can now be exposed. it is worth examining in some detail. And so it says, it talks about how that this left-wing journalist from the New Statesman set up an interview with Mr. Scruton in his London apartment. The journalist was George Eaton, that's his name. And he told Scruton that he was there, or he implied that he was coming to talk about his books. He's written a lot of books. This is a conservative commentator, a conservative in government here in the UK. And they had this exchange over lunch. It says, the lunchtime before the resulting interview's publication, Eaton declared on Twitter, this is the day before this article was supposed to be produced based upon the interview. It says, the day before, Eaton declared on Twitter that the government advisor and philosopher, Roger Scruton, has made a series of outrageous remarks and included a link to the interview, the article, I guess. It says the supposed offenses were listed with salivation. Scruton was alleged to have talked outrageously about Hungarian Jews. He was alleged to have been racist about the Chinese. He was alleged to have been described Islamophobia, or to have described it, rather, as a propaganda word invented by the Muslim Brotherhood in order to stop discussion of a major issue. It says he had described accusations of anti-Semitism against Viktor Orban as nonsense and talked of Muslim tribes, quote-unquote. Outrage and resignation calls soon followed, all because of tweets, keep in mind. It was the perfect Twitter storm. And then the real shame in this is you have all of these conservative MPs that came forward because of these tweets, because of the Twitter mob, and said that, well, yes, Scruton does need to be sacked. He needs to be fired. If he said those things, then he definitely needs to go. And by that night, by tea time, it says, within 5 hours of the tweets, he was fired. And the journalist, what was his name, George Eaton? Oh, he went right to Instagram with a glass of champagne. This was cause for celebration, you see. This was treated with jubilation, the article says, especially by Eaton, who posted on Instagram and subsequently deleted a photo of himself online necking a bottle of champagne. His caption, the feeling when you get right-wing racist and homophobe Roger Scruton sacked as a Tory government advisor. This is the time to celebrate. But read on. If you're interested in the facts, read on in this piece. Spectator writes, but what had the philosopher actually said? And had he been fairly represented? No one who called for his resignation tried to find out. It's just like the Covington boys. No one cared to watch the full video. They just saw the smirk. And they ran with it. They saw the tweet. And the story wrote itself. That's all you need, you see. Just one tweet. Well, there are a few, not nearly enough, but a few who said, well, was the interview recorded? Shouldn't we hear the recording? Shouldn't we hear these statements in context, if in fact they were even statements of his? This Spectator author, he has since interviewed Scruton, and it says here, Scruton carefully explains his views on homosexuality, saying his remarks came from a book about sexual desire that he wrote 30 years ago. I actually argued that it's not a perversion, he says, but that it is different. Then people take little sentences out of context. He adds that the learned editors of the website BuzzFeed like to take such remarks out of context and put together a kind of patchwork of offenses without bothering to examine arguments or anything like that. So you get caricatured as a particular kind of thing, as though you were somebody who wants to stone homosexuals to death or something. Just because you said that it's different. You said that it's different. It says here, and the supposedly outrageous remarks about Hungarian Jews, it's an interesting reminiscence about Viktor Orban. Scruton has known Orban since communist days and criticized him. I think power has gone to his head, he says. He's made some decisions which are very popular with the Hungarian people because the Hungarians were extremely alarmed by this sudden invasion of huge tribes of Muslims from the Middle East. And you have to remember that their history of their relation with Islam is not a happy one. So here he is recounting some history. It says in the article, is invasion the most diplomatic word to use about the migrant wave of 2015? Perhaps not. Perhaps not. But the question really ought to be, does the government regard use of this word as a sackable offense? He used the word invasion and needs to be fired? And that's what happened. And they did it before they even heard the tapes. They did it before they even heard the Scruton tapes. They didn't care about the truth. They didn't want the full story. That's not how they work. Claiming to fight for tolerance and freedom, leftism actually uses intimidation, bullying, and mob rule in an attempt to gain power. See, they're actually very much intolerant of any view that opposes their own. John Stossel had a report posted at his website, or a website I guess he works with, yesterday or the day before, on the rise of citizen journalists, people that are just taking to the event themselves with their phone or their camera or whatever, to give you a report from the field, and you can take it or leave it. I think the spread of fake news is giving a lot of momentum to this movement, to these independents who are out there with their own devices and gaining quite a following on YouTube and other social media sites. He's interviewing here, and it's interesting to note this so-called citizen journalist, Tim Pool. He's from the left wing. He's a Bernie Sanders reporter, and yet he's going out there to some of these left-wing mobs, and he's exposing it for what it is. And so he's creating a lot of enemies for himself on the left. This is Stossel in his interview with Tim Pool just the other day, clip 3.
You call yourself a person of the left, and you worked at Vice.
Yeah.
But now you're mostly criticizing the left.
This really strange faction of people on the left that are saying ridiculous things that make no sense. They're hurting the left, and they're helping Donald Trump.
Trump gets voters who watch those protests.
Yep. Do look at this protest in Portland. A Bernie Sanders supporter showed up with an American flag to protest against the fascists. And so what did Antifa do? Cracked him over the head with a club, put him in the hospital with a concussion.
That's always the part the major media leave out, you see. Antifa taking a club to the head of that Bernie Sanders supporter. And he ends up in the hospital. And this is a story that's played out over and again. Portland, Charlottesville, Baltimore, Ferguson, the Covington boys, as I mentioned. Here's a bit more from that same interview, clip 4.
Pool won fans with his coverage of the Covington school conflict.
All of these big news outlets, even the Washington Post, CNN, they immediately made the assumption he must be a racist sneering at this Native American man. I didn't make that assumption. I just see a guy banging a drum and a kid with a weird look on his face. So I looked at some other videos.
And posted his own video explanation.
The initial narrative that we heard from the activists was that this kid got in this man's face. You have just seen right now, it's actually the other way around. No one else watched the video.
How could that be? No one watched the longer video?
Nope. Here's what happens. One left-wing journalist says, look at this racist. His buddy sees it and says, wow, look at this racist. And then it's a big old circular game of telephone where no one actually does any fact checking. And then New York Times, Washington Post, CNN all published the same fake story.
That's someone coming from the left wing exposing how these fake stories gain traction. It's a big circular game where no one does any fact-checking, where no one cares to watch the... This is their job, keep in mind. Someone in another profession, you can understand why they wouldn't want to sit down and watch 90 minutes of video, boring video on YouTube. But then they go to CNN. CNN plays a tiny clip, takes it totally out of context, and it's actually, what actually happened is the other way around. And then do they come out when they're exposed as fake? Do they come out and apologize? Do they show any kind of repentance or remorse? Rolling Stone, remember after Russiagate and the Mueller report came out, said that, look, we've been hanging our hats on this. This was a left-wing reporter who said the same thing as Tim Pool there. We're not going to learn from this. We've been lying for 2 years, but you're not going to see us learn any lessons from this. He made an interesting point, this young man did, in his exchange with John Stossel about that it used to be religious conservatives who were out there saying, look, we're letting too much go in the name of free speech. All of this smut, all of this garbage that you see online. But who do you hear from today? Who is the group panicking on how that certain kinds of speech ought to be shut up? This is the last clip we have from that John Stossel interview, clip 5.
Poole is now a zealot for free speech.
When I was growing up, it was the religious conservatives that had the moral panic about music and swear words. But today, the moral panic is coming from the left. What happened to the left at Berkeley holding up signs saying free speech? Today, the left shows up with torches and burns free speech signs. That's not the left. And so, you know,
it is the left.
But
the old left.
They want everyone to believe that someone like me, who is a supporter of Bernie Sanders, is a conservative. That way, actual conservatives look insane.
That's what his critics are now saying. Well, you must be, if you're out there going with this message or taking these videos to YouTube, then you must be a conservative. And here he's a Bernie Sanders supporter. They claim to fight for tolerance and freedom, but in fact, they intimidate, they bully their way to the front of the line. And they'll destroy someone, anyone, who gets in their way. A distinguished scholar and historian, commentator, a conservative MP. Take him out with a tweet and then celebrate with champagne and tell the whole world on Instagram. Going back to that article by Joel Hilliker, he said, look closely at what is happening on our college campuses. This rot has been fermenting for years, and now it's getting more emotional and animated by the spirit of the mob, more violent. It shows the extremes to which the intolerance of the radical left is going. This toxic behavior is seeping beyond the safe places of these campuses. It's affecting high schools, middle schools, even grade schools. It's transforming American workplaces. It's making its way into courtrooms. It's spreading into our politics. It vividly shows where these policies proposed to solve the nation's problems actually end up creating crises that are many times worse. That's why this is so frightening. If you didn't know God's truth, it's scary to see this happening. And he talks later in his article about how it's already found its way into the tech sector, Silicon Valley. It was Mark Zuckerberg, I think, in his testimony before the Senate about a year ago or so that admitted it's extremely left-wing out where he lives, out where his company is. This was part of his testimony last year, clip 7.
Facebook and the tech industry are located in Silicon Valley, which is an extremely left-leaning place. And this is actually a concern that I have and that I try to root out at the company, is making sure that we don't have any bias in the work that we do. And I think it is a fair concern that that people would at least wonder about.
Let me ask.
It is a fair concern. Even he says that. So when people, or rather Facebook, comes out and bans all these organizations, like it did recently. This is from the American Spectator. One does not have to agree with any of the banned listed above. It was the Alex Jones, and then they threw in Farrakhan as well, and then several other groups. One does not have to agree with any of the banned listed above to recognize the latest left-wing censorship ploy for what it really is, yet another big tech effort to censor conservatives or Trump supporters, with the far-left Farrakhan tossed into the mix as a balance token. It says, note well that this comes a matter of days and weeks after Google blacklisted this very publication. This is American Spectator. And it goes and talks about the history of the American Spectator. Going back to 1967, a publication, a magazine. Now it's online, of course. That's been around for more than 50 years. 50 years. And Google says, well, I don't like it. They broke some rules. It says, no one is fooled about what is really going on here. These latest bannings from the leftist culture of Silicon Valley are nothing more than the latest idea from the left on how to shut down opposition from the right. You think about how this will impact future elections. The Spectator says conservatives get the gig. Facebook and Google and the Poynter Institute and too many places to name in big tech and mainstream media are run by leftist zealots who are rabidly intolerant, bent on controlling speech, deciding what can and cannot be said, and making themselves the arbiters of what is and what is not acceptable. They're the arbiters. They decide. And they're all coming from this extremely left-wing culture. Zuckerberg admitted as much. There was a Newsweek article last year talking about all of the contributions made to the political campaigns from 2016 coming from Google. Google employees gave Hillary Clinton something like $1.6 million in funding. They gave $40,000 to the fringe party, the Green Movement, Jill Stein, $40,000 as compared to $1.6 million for Hillary Clinton. And then to Donald Trump, the one who actually became president, he pulled in $24,000. This article says you're more likely to die by being shot than to be a Google employee that's contributed to Republican Party candidates. In Mr. Hilliker's article, he said if you base your survey on political campaign contributions, that teachers constitute one of the most liberal professions in the nation. Teachers! They're taking over everything. It's like I said when we visited Monticello. So they have the university campuses. They're in the classrooms, not just at college, high schools, now middle schools, grade schools. It's extremely left-wing in Silicon Valley. Popular culture, the media, the administrative state, the deep state, the bureaucrats, the career law enforcement officials, and on it goes. If you want to get a shot, a little bit of a snapshot into what America will be like a few years from now. Well, look at the college campuses, the university campuses today. Look at what some of these big companies are doing without even really batting an eye. There was a story at Breitbart, May 2nd, a few days ago, about the banning not only of Alex Jones, but if you even link to something about Alex Jones or from his program, then you're going to get warned and maybe banned as well. So they're going out to not just the source itself, but someone that would say anything about it. Breitbart says this takes censorship on social media to altogether new levels. If you post InfoWars content on Facebook or Facebook-owned Instagram, your post will be removed. If you post it repeatedly, you will be banned. Note the wording, too. Breitbart says, you'll be banned unless you're condemning InfoWars. If you condemn it, you're okay. Facebook is now brazenly using its power to reward certain political positions and punish others. This isn't censorship of an individual or a group or a violation of terms of service. It's the wholesale ban of an independent media site, which for all the criticism levied against it, has had a major impact on politics in the United States. You can't deny that. It has had an impact. Of course, a lot of people on the left and the right would view the site as crazy, but still, you can't deny that it has had an influence on politics. And if that's the case, then how influential is this decision coming from Facebook? How much influence does this have on politics on the next election? It's something to think about. Free speech? Have these outfits forgotten about the First Amendment? There's supposed to be, I don't think I'll take the time to play this bit from Ben Shapiro, but he says, you know, there's a difference basically from a site like his. He's a news site. He has editors. He posts things or doesn't post things based upon whether or not he thinks they're accurate, true, effective, all that. But these other outfits like Facebook and Instagram, Twitter, they're platforms. Through which information flows. If you're, like he said, if you're on the phone, if you're using AT&T to talk to someone else on the other end of the line, you could say something stupid. You could say something that's irresponsible or reckless, and AT&T can't be blamed for that. But now here you have these social media platforms, and they're treated like platforms, and yet they're doing things, they're taking... They're making editorial decisions like what the editors at the New York Times or Daily Wire or the Daily Caller, they're making decisions about content, about the information that should or should not flow through that platform or through that tube, however you want to look at it. They want it both ways. And of course, they're given a tremendous amount of latitude. And they're really far to the left. Zuckerberg admitted as much. They're far to the left. If you haven't read Mr. Hilliker's piece, well, what was the title of it? It's posted just today, I believe. His Trumpet Hour broadcast was from yesterday. If you'd like to listen to the story, the truth, about what's happening on our college campuses today. Well, I'm in a little bit of a bind now because I don't quite have enough time to finish with some of the audio feedback that we're getting. I guess we've got a couple of minutes, so maybe you can play, if you can edit on the fly, Sam, to play the first three or four until we run out of time. This is feedback coming from some of you, our listeners, and some good feedback at that. We'll finish off today's show with some comments from you.
As I was thinking right now, how much I love this information, just everything that you guys put out. Obviously, a lot of it is overwhelming, the spiritual aspects, but once you make the changes, it's really beneficial, just like prayer. It's obviously easier to change the physical aspects, such as, you know, eating correctly, exercise. But it's beneficial in the end. I used to weigh 300 pounds and just, you know, taking your advice, it really opens your eyes and there's physical changes, benefits. It's really nice to know that the older people in the church are benefiting because I am an example of taking that advice and receiving really great results. I lost 100 pounds, like I said, and yeah, thanks to everybody.
I wanted to let you know I just got through watching the new Sheriff in Town audio recording of yours. I enjoy listening to your program and watching your videos. I enjoy receiving the written material. I have signed up for the Bible correspondence course. I'm enjoying learning everything again. I am saddened to find out that we have been misled for so long. It is nice to actually hear and see the truth once again. I hope that more find you. I hope more come to understand what's actually been happening. I appreciate everything you do. Once again, thank you very much.
Talking about President Donald Trump, it's incredible how his own people can do this to him. Can you imagine what can they do to a foreigner? I love United States. United States is a great country. President Donald Trump has done good for the country, but they don't see it that way. Thank you and bye-bye.